Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. Thanks for listening in. My name is Linda Mooney, and this is Other Worlds of Romance. And tonight I have with me Liza O'Connor. Hi, Liza. How are you doing?
Hi. Doing well so far.
So far, and surviving your summer?
Yes. I'm right now in a highly productive time, and so lots of books coming out. Every month I've got a book coming out, so it's been a little hectic.
Oh, wow.
But
that's
we're
fantastic.
Doing well.
Oh, that's great. Well, Liza's going to be reading tonight from Surviving Sojourn, which is book 4 of her Multiverses. It is a sci-fi romance. And if you'd like to talk to Liza after she gets through reading her excerpt, you're more than welcome to call in. Our number is 646-727-2932. If you have a question that you'd like to pass along to me for me to ask her, the chat room is open. You're welcome to come in there and listen to the program and drop your question there. Or you can email it to me, linda@lindamooney.com, and I'd be more than happy to pass it along for her answer. Now, for those of you who don't know Liza, she lives in Denville, New Jersey with her dog, Jess. And they hike in fabulous woods every day, rain or shine, sleet or snow. Having an adventurous nature, she learned to fly small Cessnas in New Jersey, hang glide in New Zealand, kayak in Pennsylvania, ski in New York, scuba dive with great white sharks in Australia. Are you guys jealous yet? Because I certainly am. Dig up dinosaur bones in Montana, skydive in Indiana, and raft a class 4 river in Tasmania. She's an avid gardener, amateur photographer, and dabbler in watercolors and graphic arts. Yet through her entire life, her first love has and always will be writing novels. Now, Liza, I've got to ask you, what kind of job do you have that allows you to have such an adventurous life?
Well, that's an interesting point. Through my career, whenever I would leave one job and go to another, I'd make like a 2 to 3 month sabbatical where I'd go off and do things. So a lot of my really interesting things like going to Australia and New Zealand were in one of those, you know, between jobs. And it's amazing because when I'd come back from my 3 months, then somebody would say, "We're sorry we fired you. Can we hire you back?" You know?
What? Oh, my gosh.
It was kind of interesting. And then when I turned 46, I just said, you know, I've got enough money. I can be a starving author for the rest of my life. Let's do it. And so I stopped working at that point and just became a starving author.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Well, I am jealous. I go on self vacations every year for about a week to 2 weeks, just seeing places that I've never been before, like New York and I've been to Montana and all. But I'd love to go overseas. I'm too chicken to do it, so I stay within the U.S. But like I said, you've got a wonderful life, and you can draw on all that experience when you're writing.
Absolutely.
And it's wonderful. Okay. Well, Liza, I'm going to turn the floor over to you so you can tell us about, first of all, tell us about, now, Surviving Sojourn is the book 4 of,
yes,
of this series and all. And you call it sci-fi soap opera with humor, romance, and science. Why don't you tell us about the other three that preceded this one?
Well, the first one focuses on Earth, mm-hmm, and there are two species living, you know, basically, I mean, there are lots of species, but there's the humans, and then in another dimension, there are these water people called oceanics, and they are mm-hmm. fabulous. And I should mention, above it all, because it's like a two-level storyline, there are the gods mm-hmm. that live in a ship and bicker and fight a bunch, and they're really the humor part because they're hysterically funny. They're like misbehaving, very brilliant children. anyway, they and the Zusan, the captain of the ship, has this problem of his father, whom he detests, has written a contract that has all these, you cannot do this, you cannot do that. And so he is really struggling to get anything done because of all the rules he has to follow. And so there's all this bureaucratic nonsense going on that just about kills him. But anyway, it's very light and fun. Now, of course, it gets a little dark at some points where little oceanics have to die and, you know, stuff like that. Not good. But the second book then goes over to the human side, and we learn why they have to leave Earth and go to Terra Nu. And it's, you know, so they get on the ship to go to Terra Nu, and that's surviving outbound. And things start being rough right off the bat because there are people, and they're actually associated with Zuzon's father, who do not wish this ship to survive and go to Terra Nu. And then book three is that they land in Terra Nu, and they discover it's a lovely place except for a couple little problems. There are Tyrannosaurus rexes there. There are bears the size of elephants. Mm. And there are, you know, saber-toothed tigers. All these things aren't real real good to have. But it's, even worse is there are five seasons, and only two of them are survivable, which is a wee bit of a problem for them. But they get through all of that, and then in book four, the second child that they have, the main three, they're called the spirit, the spirit of three. They had their children when they're born have all the memories of them, you know, already. So they're like little adults born in a baby's body. And they don't do well if you try to make them be a baby because you've got a person with the memories and the thoughts of, you know, past generations. And so in the case of Sojourn, which was the second child, there was actually a prophecy written that if he didn't get off this, you know, planet, that everybody was going to accuse him of being the cause of a plague. So they grew him into a 21-year-old man on his day of birth, which it gives him some quirks, and he talks about it in the part I'm going to read for tonight. But he's a very interesting character, and I really came to love him. The reason why I chose book four is because it is my favorite of the group, and it's because of. He's such a cute guy.
Well, you want to start with the blurb so we have an idea of what this one is about?
Absolutely.
Okay.
An alien species is removing humans' colonies from the planets, but to where, no one knows. Sojourn, along with the Emperor's daughter and their crew, must find this unknown species and negotiate a treaty before the Empire army declares war on all non-human races. Those who do not follow the path of light would prefer to kill all non-human sentient beings before they are even aware that they are under attack. Matters turn bleak for the path of light before the journey ever begins. While provisioning on Terra Nu, Sojourn's ship gets a hole blown in its side by the xenophobes. And that's the blurb.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll start with, switch over, and we'll start with the, I'm starting on chapter one, the very first of it. So we'll just go for that. All right. Something moved in Sojourn's dinner of rehydrated protein and vegetable stew. He poked at it with his spoon, and a green head the size of his thumb rose above the brown goo and clamped down on the utensil, tearing at it with its rows of needle-sharp teeth. His shipmates, farther down the stainless steel dining table, roared with raucous laughter. One of them must have found the vicious creature on Alpha 201, the planet they'd just left. Everyone had been hoping for a bonus, which they got whenever a colony survived a full year. Unfortunately, not a single person remained on the planet. So the crew decided to take out their frustrations on the newest crew member. Funny, real funny, Sojourn declared, tempted to toss his spoon with the attached Gila worm down the table. But that would get him into trouble again. Instead, he carried his bowl over to the barely functioning recycling unit and poured the contents down the hole. He'd probably catch hell for throwing a non-degradable spoon away, but no way was he going to risk a potentially lethal bite just to save one slightly warped eating utensil. The recycling unit groaned and shivered as if it didn't feel like working today. Or maybe it didn't like Gila worms either. The brown sludge and Gila worm had just disappeared when Captain Longfellow's voice barked from the ship's communication system. "Sojourn, to the bridge!" Old man Thomas, no doubt the idiot who brought the Gila aboard, smirked and leaned back in his chair. Was that brig or bridge? Charles, playing cards at the end of the table with Drogon, paused in his game. It'd save time if he let you just head to the brig straight off. Everybody laughed at Drogon. Still, the blue-skinned Gildor Oceanic had to be relieved not to be the target of their torment for once. The morons of this crew constantly told him fish jokes, which no doubt made the fellow wish he had never left his water planet. Sometimes these jerks made Sojourn wish he'd never left Terranu. But in his case, he had no choice. According to a prophecy, if he didn't leave, the colonists would blame him for some terrible plague that was coming. When his parents explained the necessity, Captain Longfellow had taken him on as a member of his crew, since Sojourn came from a genetic strand of humans who could telepathically communicate with animals. The captain made him a handler. Outbound captains greatly prized handlers, since animals did not travel well in space unless they were constantly reassured. Sojourn's job was to keep the animals calm during travel and get them on and off the ship with no harm to the ship or livestock. Today's task had been a challenge. He'd had to calm and capture half-wild horses and cows that remained at the failed colony and then put them in a cargo hold. An almost impossible task, but he'd done it within the time the captain had allotted. Maybe that's why the crew pranked him. He was the only one the captain had not yelled at this morning. Drogon gave him a look of sympathy, and Sojourn nodded it to his only friend on the ship. Well, breathing friend. Lieutenant Cass and he had something going on, but exactly what was hard to pin down, and not just because she was a ghost. From his parents' memories, which he had acquired at birth, he knew a bit about Cass's past. She and the captain had been in love for years, but since she was the second in command, neither of them had acted upon their feelings. Then she'd gotten blown to bits during the outbound journey to Terranu. Being hard-headed and difficult, she decided to stay with the captain as a ghost rather than follow her lights towards the gods. Unfortunately, the captain could not see or touch her. Over time, as she screamed her words, he could faintly hear them, and he could sense her presence if she came within inches of him. Drogon could see and hear her, but he was so shy she'd given up trying to converse with the fellow. Shaman Troy could see and hear her, But she avoided the shaman since he was always trying to move her on to the light. The other morons on the ship had no clue she even existed. Cass had latched on to Sojourn the moment he came aboard a year ago. He originally thought she was enchanted with his blonde hair and blue eyes, two beautiful people attracted by their similar features. Now he suspected she spent so much time with him because she just needed to be with someone who could see and joke around with her. Shaman Troy had evidently warned her that most ghosts fade away from being constantly ignored. Sojourn, you need to get to the bridge now, Drogon warned. The captain did sound pissed off, Charles laughed. You afraid to go? Should Gilly go with you and hold your hand? God, he hated Charles. Without responding, Sojourn hurried down the dreary hallway and up the rungs to the next floor of the ship. It was pretty much a junk heap after 20 years of outbound service, but its quantum engine still worked, so the piece of crap remained in the fleet. He'd learned the hard way not to disparage the old bucket within the captain's hearing. Longfellow once heard him refer to it as a dung heap of dented metal and broken down appliances. That earned him a week cleaning the ship's galley with his toothbrush. Gods, he was tired of being scolded and punished. His three parents, Tam Sarum Dim, had changed him into a grown man the day of his birth. But everybody kept treating him as if he'd been born last year. Well, technically, that was true, but he wasn't a stupid baby. He'd been born with the knowledge and memory of two humans, a spirit, and a Sargon bull named Blue. He knew more than the rest of these idiots put together, with the possible exception of Drogon. His blue friend was scary brilliant. When Sojourn reached the door to the control room, he placed his right hand onto the screen and spoke his name so his identity could be triple verified via eye pattern, handprint, and voice confirmation. A second later, the door opened with a whoosh. Ensign Sojourn on the bridge, sir. Maybe the captain was going to promote him for the great job he'd done gathering the animals. He wanted that to be the reason he'd been called. But the last 27 times he'd held such hope, it had ended with him being called down for one stupid thing or another. Most ensigns were promoted up or fired within the first 6 months. An outbound ship had no room for slackers. He'd been ensign for a year now. Maybe his time had finally come. Longfellow sat before an ugly bank of outdated monitors. Upon hearing Sojourn, he turned his swivel chair and glared at him. Is it your goal to be the oldest ensign in outbound history? All hopes for a promotion shriveled and died. No, but it seems to be my destiny. What have I done now? By the fire in Longfellow's eyes, he wished he could take back his words. It had clearly pissed off the captain further. Do not take that tone with me, ensign. I am your captain. If he didn't defuse his situation soon, he'd be sleeping in the brig tonight. I'm sorry, sir. However, I really have no idea what I've done. I've been trying to watch my mouth and stay out of trouble. The moment I get off duty, I head for the simulation room. If someone is accusing me of something, I'd sure like to know what, because to my way of thinking, I've been a saint. His declaration seemed to agitate Longfellow even further. Someone has complained, and it concerns a simulation which you have spent all your free time enjoying. A faint groan escaped him. Gods! The man knew about the special simulation someone had buried under the title Historical Assessment of Plant Life on Earth. It also meant a certain ghost had blabbed her stupid mouth. Damn, Cass! Hot one moment and cold the next. No one could tell him she hadn't enjoyed those simulations as much as he. So why the hell would she bring it to Longfellow's attention? You never said it was off limits, sir. Longfellow held up his hand to silence him as he glanced at their new pilot, watching them with interest. Emotion sojourned to the conference room and closed the door so they could speak in private. "How did you even find the simulation?" the captain demanded. Cass appeared behind Longfellow and shook her head, her eyes pleading for him not to reveal that she had led him to it. His gaze held on the blonde, lanky ghost. He should just tell the truth and let her take the grief. But he couldn't, not with her beautiful green eyes begging for his silence. "I gave the computer parameters for a simulation, and it offered me one it thought I would like. And I did. Like it, that is. I know there's something between you two, sir, but she's the only woman other than my mother's whom I've ever met. I felt more comfortable having simulated sex with her than strangers." Longfellow's anger dissipated as he gripped Sojourn's shoulder and sighed. "Of course you would." For a moment, Sojourn thought he might not only leave with a stay in the brig, but receive the captain's permission to use his personal program in the future. "When we dock at Nebulan Station, I'll look for a female crew member." Sojourn shook his head at that terrible idea. "Then I'll just get in more fights with the other members. The memories that came from my father in blue make it inevitable. My father loves and respects his wives and would never allow anyone to treat his women with disrespect. Then there's Blue's influence upon me. He'll kill any other Sargon male prowling around his favorite females." Longfellow's glare returned. "Then I must have a bit of Sargon Blue in me as well, because I am not about to share my woman with you." "But this is only a simulation of Cass. If you fell in love with a young crew member, would you want the other guys enjoying a simulation of her?" Sojourn shook his head. Honestly, he didn't like Captain Longfellow using Cass' simulation. But he sure as hell had sense not to admit that out loud. "And that concludes my reading for tonight."
Wow.
Sojourn's a handful.
He is a handful. Wow. Okay. I'm sitting here thinking about I'm going to go to Eileen's question over here. Eileen sent us a question saying, "How many books do you plan for this series?"
Ah, good question. The series technically ends at the end of this one, but Sojourn's book starts the new series, in essence. So Sojourn's like the pivot between the two series. And I plan to have a future series with Sojourn as a captain, because the cool thing is right now he can't even get out of being an ensign. You know, he's completely at the total bottom. And he very quickly will be promoted up, and then unfortunately the captain's going to die and they make him the captain of the ship, and it is his job to find out where these aliens are, who the aliens are who are taking the humans off these planets. And so that's his task throughout the thing. And while being tasked to do that, he falls in love with the emperor's daughter. And of course it's hopeless.
Okay,
he's thinking, I'm a slug that was born on Terra Nu, and she's the she will someday be the empress. I mean, there can be nothing between us. But he adores and loves her, and so that romance runs through the whole story, because he doesn't think he's worthy, but the way she sees him is entirely different, because he is in the prophecies. The gods speak about him, and she knows for sure he follows the path of light. And so to her, he is greater than her. And so it's really a nice thing when they finally talk it out and they discover that there is no barrier, to love.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, though, one of the things that I was wondering is that if he was just born and he's not, and he was automatically made into this young man, how did he get into the Space Corps so quickly?
Oh, because the captain of the ship is allowed to hire people on for these outbound missions. And quite frankly, they lose a lot of people on these outbound missions. Mm-hmm. So they basically pick up the staff anywhere they can. And he was turned into a 21-year-old, healthy, strong ensign. And so he was brought in as an ensign. The captain hired him. The captain has that say. I mean, when you're going from planet to planet, there's no point in trying to communicate back with, some bureaucrat, on some space station, that you need to hire someone. That's your job. You hire them, you take them in, you fire them, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So you said that Sojourn is going to start his own quote series, so to speak. Is this the Skywriter series that you're talking about?
No, actually, the Skywriters is a different series I'm writing. The Sojourns will be in outer space. The Skywriters are on Earth in the Americas. And it's after the terror wars, and they had nuclear explosions everywhere, and so now there are these really weird wind patterns that are basically like stationary hurricanes that sit over the America, and they use them for there's no more oil left. They blew all that up during the terror wars. And so they use it for wind, tunnel. They have windmills everywhere, the big modern windmills, not the old Dutch windmills. But they use it for energy. And so, the U.S. is got a lot of energy, got a lot of wind, but no oil. And that's true around the entire world. And they're trying to rebuild each world, each country, because all the countries are basically now segregated. You live on your land and you cannot cross the ocean anymore. So, because it's just way too violent. Ships can't run it anymore. So but that's a different, that's, I actually love that series too. But I guess an author always loves all their books or they wouldn't write them.
Yeah.
But that book has I'm planning to bring out three. One of them starts this year, and then the other two I'll bring out in 2017, and then I'll probably bring out more. I've already written them, so they just have to be. Dotted, sent to the editor, prettied up and put a cover on them and stuff. So,
yeah.
But I've got probably 8 or 9 of those books written. So
good.
That's one of those things. You just have to pick and choose what you want to, publish, and it's a challenge for me.
Well, if you'd like to sign up for Liza's newsletter. You're more than welcome to go to LizaOConnor.com. That's LizaOConnor.com. You can sign up for her newsletter. And she doesn't write just sci-fi. She also does contemporary suspense and historical, and besides her sci-fi. And I love the way you write. There's a humorous contemporary disaster romance.
Yes.
A Long Road to Love series and all. That looks hilarious and all. Well, Liza, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And it has been a treat. And I would love to hear more about, when your Skywriter series starts up too, give me a holler and let's get you back on the show and let's listen to that, because that sounds very unique and, like I said, it just right up my alley too. So make that a point, okay?
I will. I believe I'll be bringing that out in October, so I'll give you a call.
All right. Super, super. Well, my name is Linda Booney. This is Other Worlds of Romance. Thanks for listening in. Thank you for those of you who emailed in a question. Appreciate you listening, and we'll see you again next week. Take care, and have a great week. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Night, everybody.
And we're done. Yeah, we're done.
All right.
Hey, that was, you did great. I love the way you did those voices and everything. And all that that's a very unique perspective with Sojourn. Him being very, basically, he knows all this stuff, but he's never experienced it firsthand, and so everything's just kind of new for him. It's like, yeah, I know it, but hey. It's different when you experience firsthand.
Well, and one of the traits he got, I mean, the bull, which is a sentient being, he just happens to be a giant blue bull.
Mm-hmm.
He is the messiah of his people. He's got an ego as big as the world. I mean, and unfortunately, you know, Sojourn got that same ego because, you know, he has his memories. And so it's really, it's hard for him to be an ensign. And as a matter of fact, later on, the ghost, Cass, you know, says, you know, he'd be better off if he were a lieutenant because he doesn't have the behaviors of an ensign and he'll never have the behaviors of an ensign. And then things happen and he ends up being promoted from, he spent a day as a lieutenant and then he became captain of the ship. So it was, and now he's like, whoa, I am so way over my head, you know, I have no clue what to do. and that's kind of, you know, it's one of those moments where he just has to confess that he's, you know, someday he will be, but he is not ready for this job. And,
obviously, but
so
he has hope.
Was,
he has hope.
Yeah, and he was humble enough to admit that. I was impressed with him.
Well, Liza,
yeah,
I'm going to have to let you go. But take care, and I look forward to us talking again.
Yes,
I'm interested in this other series.
I'll let you know when the next book's coming out but for the
All right.
Sky Writer.
Okay. You did
All
great
right.
tonight. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Well, we'll be talking to you again later. All right?
All right.
All right. Good night.